Edward Guthrie, and I am a research associate at Vanderbilt University.
Yeah, the particular area of Vanderbilt that you work for, can you give me just a little bit of a mission statement for that department?
Sure. I work with a group called the Tennessee Education Research Alliance. We are a research practice partnership between researchers, mostly at Vanderbilt University, and the State Department of Education here in Tennessee. We have an organizational mission to do policy-focused research to support the department and educators in the state.
Yeah, and as I understand it, you have some experience with the Nashville system, is that right?
Some experience the Nashville system. I've also done research in other parts of the country. I previously researched school turnaround in North Carolina before working with Tara here in Tennessee and studying the Tennessee system.
Yeah, yeah. So the op-ed that you did for the Tennessee, and I'm a little curious about kind of the genesis of that. What was it that motivated you to take time to chime in on that issue?
So the op-ed comes out of a strand of research we've been doing at Vanderbilt that tries to help the state understand the progress that's being made in the area of its lowest performing schools. Are its lowest performing schools improving over time? And this isn't just taking one individual school that's been part of an intervention and measuring whether it's made progress. But whatever the problem was that when you look at the overall landscape of school performance in the state, whatever the problem was that you feel like could be addressed through school turnaround, do we see less of that problem over time, however you define it? And there are a lot of different ways to define it. You can define it as the number of schools falling below some threshold. You can define it as, you know, is that bottom 5%, how far are they from the state average or the state median? These types of questions, and are we getting better on those metrics over time? And it's a different way of thinking about it than just, you know, cycles of just looking at which schools are on the list of 85 every 3 years and getting up in arms as though that tells us something new about how any of those schools are improving.
Yeah.
Other than how they are performing relative to the rest of the state, it doesn't really tell us anything new. And it becomes, because we identify 5% on every list every 3 years, there's always going to be about 85 schools on the list. And it's a little bit of a zero-sum game where every school that moves off the list, whether because we close it, as Shelby County is closing 7 of its priority schools that were on the list, well, that just means 7 schools are going to have to come onto the list from somewhere else. And the Shelby I Zone that has demonstrated a lot of success, those schools have improved, but for every school that improves and moves out of the bottom 5%, another school has to come on from somewhere, and it doesn't mean that they regressed. It doesn't mean they're performing any worse than they ever were. But if they get passed by a school, now they are on the priority list, and we need to keep that in mind when we think about what problem we're trying to address with these turnaround efforts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that may have actually gotten us into the question that I mentioned, and that is I'd really like for you to reproduce for me, if you would, your thoughts on kind of the pros and cons of using this system of, designating top-performing schools and underperforming schools. So what are the pros and cons of using a system like that?
There are pros and cons to identifying the lowest 5% of schools and saying that you're going to give them special attention, special intervention. The con is that it doesn't tell you anything about what educators are doing in those schools. If we wanted to intervene in schools where we felt like instruction was too poor, adults weren't paying enough attention to the kids, that there was a toxic environment that just needed to be completely reset, we would have to go into every school and look for those things and intervene in the schools where we saw them. That's not what we were doing. We are taking student test scores without seeing anything else going on in the schools and saying these are the schools where we want to intervene. The pro of that is that those test scores do show you where the highest proportion of students in need of more academic support are concentrated. They are concentrated in these schools. And if the state says, we only have the resources to go into 5% of schools. These are absolutely the schools that you would want to go into. And if you know what works in education, this is where you want to apply those practices. If you are experimenting with what you might think work in education, these are the places you want to run those experiments, because as soon as you find something that works, you want it to be in one of these schools where it can help the most students who need those supports.
Yeah. All right. So I'm curious if there's anything that you'd like to say about the Nashville system in particular, and having in this most recent report a number of new schools in the system added to that bottom five list.
Yeah, the Nashville and Shelby news comparisons have been pretty stark since the priority list came out, where in Shelby County they are really celebrating the number of schools that have come off the list, that they have fewer schools on the list. And in Nashville, the local media has noticed that there are more schools in Nashville on this priority list than there have been in prior years. That might not tell us much about how either system is performing overall, because it is a zero-sum game where we have 5% of all schools on each list. For all the progress Shelby has made, either in improving schools or just completely closing schools that were on the prior list, schools have to come on the list to replace them, and they're going to have to come from somewhere. The fact that they came from Nashville and not from within Memphis for other schools that hadn't been on the list before, the fact that replacing the schools that came off the list from Shelby County, they were not replaced by more schools from Shelby County, and they were instead replaced by schools in Nashville, doesn't tell us anything about how Nashville and Shelby County or those schools in Nashville have been performing since the last list came out. And even on this list that just came out on Friday, Shelby County has already closed 7 schools for underperformance, or announced that they will close at the end of the year. And so we already know for the 2021 list, there will have to be at least 7 new schools on that list. And the schools, whichever ones end up on that list in the future, they could improve between now and then and still end up on the list.
Yeah.
So any of the panic over having more schools on the list is probably misplaced. And anybody worried about that probably just needs to understand the process, that there always have to be schools. There always have to be about 85 schools on the list. And
So I'm curious if, given your thoughts on that, have you discussed with the state some other metric, having a certain data point where schools are added to that list, as opposed to just a flat number of schools, or a flat percentage of schools on that list?
I'm not sure the metric needs to change as long as we understand the metric and the goals that it serves. If you measure the bottom 5% and you say these are the schools where we want to go in with interventions and additional supports, that can be a fine policy as long as you understand it doesn't say anything about what educators in the school have been doing, and that it is a policy that can go on forever, always serving the same number of schools.
Yeah.
Whether or not that is an efficient way to go about it can be a question of how different those schools are performing from schools in the rest of the state. If the rest of the state is academically excelling and you have some schools that are left behind, that can become a very important strategy, is intervening in those schools. Right now, we're at a point where, by state assessments, only about 30 to 40% of students are proficient statewide. So whether or not intervening in some schools instead of doing things that serve all schools, the efficiency of that might be in a different position place now than it would be if we saw the rest of the state excelling.
Yeah. I haven't dug really deeply into the numbers, but kind of a cursory glance would suggest that most of these schools that perennially end up on the bottom five list are the states, our schools and systems in the state's largest cities. So I'm curious if that suggests to you that perhaps the state should be, you know, there should be changes to perhaps funding priorities from the state and federal level with regard to some of these larger big city systems.
Perhaps, and especially with these schools in particular, we also see a lot of academic excellence in a lot of our urban districts across the state. One way to kind of balance the funding disparities to the extent that they exist, or that they that we need even greater resources concentrated into the schools that need them most, this priority list helps us do that by identifying the schools where you have the highest proportion of students in need of more additional academic supports. And the priority list identifies schools that are eligible for significant grants for those schools to hire more resources, new teachers, recruit new teachers, have instructional coaches, support extended school days, curricular reforms, and a lot of the things that we think will do the most to help the students in those schools.